Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Thursday, August 6th, welcome, 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 friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arrett.
So, Avi, we've read so many articles that say nobody is reading anymore. Our attention spans, they're shrinking, we're glued to our phones. Books are becoming relics. But here's some surprising news.
Okay.
Philadelphia's libraries, they're having one of their best years in decades.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, people are checking out books. They're filling the library branches once again. And that gives me a lot of hope. So maybe, just maybe,
you're pro-book. You're part of that pro-book agenda.
I'm a pro-book, people.
Interesting.
I'm pro-reading. I'm pro-reading and pro-book. So, and so to me, the question could be whether there's just a need to find the right stories, because people still want stories,
we
right?
We still want stories. We always want stories. We're wired to like stories.
Yeah, we love stories. So we just got to find the right stories in literature. So today we're going to have a kind of sort of maybe Studio 2 book club meeting.
Okay.
You know, even though we're not going to be meeting every month or anything like that.
Yeah. Maybe every year.
Every year, yeah. So whether you haven't finished a novel in 5 years, or you devour 2 books every week, or you just listen to your favorite reads, I do that sometimes, right? This hour is about rediscovering the pleasure of reading. And so we'll get recommendations from bestselling author Jennifer Weiner. She will be here. And one of Philadelphia's favorite librarians, Dina Halick. She will be here as well. We'll talk beach reads, audiobooks, overlooked genres, all the things. And so we'd love to hear from you. Share with us your absolute must-read book recommendation for 2026. And we want you to stump for your selection. The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube and Facebook, hello. Put those book recommendations in the live chat. And I had a couple people on Facebook already say they're following this because they want a recommendation.
Yeah, they need a reading list.
Yeah, because there's so many choices. Sometimes you just need,
yes,
you just need somebody to tell you what to read.
Absolutely. So stump, folks. Please stump for your favorite books. 888-477-9499. It doesn't have to be a book that just came out, by the way.
No.
Just could be a classic that you love. 888-477-9499. Oh, by the way, it's Thursday, DJ of the day. We will end the program as we always do on Thursdays with a song picked by one of you related to the theme of that day's show. Today's show is books, reading, literature, whatever, stories. So get your submissions in to EP Kevin by 12:30 for a chance to be our DJ of the day, studio2@whyy.org.
Yeah, it's a lot of, like,
there's a lot of options here.
Yeah, yeah, this is a good one. So I'm looking forward to our DJ of the day selection.
Go a lot of different ways with this one. But we have to right now go to our trio of local news stories.
Yep.
Another day, another data center debate in our region. Last night, the attention was on Vineland, New Jersey, where a data center the size of 45 football fields is currently under construction. Wow. At a community meeting Wednesday, residents grilled local officials and a rep from Data One, the company building this large facility. For months, residents have complained about a humming sound coming from the construction site. Lots of worries about water usage as well, and that's a big issue in this community because there's lots of agriculture in that part of South Jersey. Data One, the company, says it's in compliance with local noise ordinances. And by the way, if you want to read a little deeper on this, WHYY's Zoe Reed did a piece on this whole dispute back in May. So it's been bubbling for a while.
Yeah. And by the way, I want to, a recent Gallup poll said that 7 in 10 Americans are opposed to data centers in their community. And the result of this wide opposition, according to CNN, is that only half of the data centers that were slated to come online by 2028 will actually be on time.
That's fascinating.
I mean, because people are coming to these meetings, they're slowing things down.
And that's an interesting thing to point out, too, because you have a meeting on any topic, usually the people that show up are in opposition. That's just how these meetings tend to work, because those are the most passionate people. But in this case, yes, there's passionate opposition that you hear in these meetings. But like you said, it's backed up by this broader poll data showing lots of people
are against data. And all the meetings are packed. There's another meeting, Conshohocken tonight, over another data center. So this is all as people demand more and more use of AI. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. Second story, Philadelphia City Council and LGBTQ advocates, they grilled Police Commissioner Kevin Bethel this week at a hearing that examined law enforcement's response during Pride festivities that took place back in June. And the incident in question largely took place on June 7th. That's when police officers attempted to disperse crowds consisting of thousands of people who had gathered in the neighborhood in Center City instead of on Ben Franklin Parkway, where the city's Pride Parade was taking place. 15 people were arrested in that incident. And apparently groups of teenagers, they had been fighting, and some people complained that the police response to the neighborhood was excessive. There are videos of police corralling people that circulated on social media. They showed police in some cases physically tussling or struggling with folks. They displayed tasers or batons to people gathered in the area. And people were outraged. They said, look, Pride is supposed to be a celebration, and yet we have excessive police force. So city council members, they grilled Commissioner Bethel. They said the incident injured the trust between the LGBTQ community and police. And I want you to take a listen to some of the exchange between Bethel and Councilmember Rue Landau. She is the first openly LGBTQ member of council. Take a look, listen.
They were harassed. They were traumatized. This was not about protection. You had 150 officers there by your own testimony. That is a significant amount of officers.
So, I disagree with you. And because I tell you what, then do you want police there at all? Because that's the question then, right? Is policing there at all?
Yeah, clearly things got really tense. And, you know, Commissioner Bethel said they would do better next year. They would plan better next year. But, you know, folks were very upset with him. And I have to say that Commissioner Bethel, up until this time, he's had a pretty warm relationship with city council.
Right, right.
And the city. But the response at that hearing demonstrates he's not viewed as infallible at this point.
Yeah, and there's still some things to sort out. We'll see if there's any more fallout. But one of the things that the commissioner apparently said in this hearing is that the police were, if not, I don't think he used the word surprised, but they were somewhat overwhelmed by the fact that there were these two dueling celebrations, one on the parkway, one in the neighborhood where Pride festivities have traditionally taken place. And I guess I wanted to hear more about why they maybe weren't totally prepared for that, because I mean, there had been public dialogue leading up to Pride that some people were a little upset that the festivities had moved to the parkway. They still wanted it to be in the neighborhood. So I think there was some anticipation that there would be people in both places. That's my understanding. So again, I'm a little confused if maybe they didn't understand the scale of both or what exactly went into that.
And he did say that they were not prepared for the thousands of people. And sure. And by the way, this was the first time that it sort of moved out of the neighborhood because it had grown so large and the neighborhood couldn't necessarily contain all the people. And so the parkway gave more space. But folks said that they were confused.
Yeah, it seemed on some level foreseeable, but maybe not at the scale they anticipated. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
Anyways, story number three. So if you were listening to the Phillies on the radio last night, you got an absolute treat.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the backstory. The Phils do this thing annually where they hold a charity auction and a person can bid to be the play-by-play radio announcer for one inning. So last night, in the third inning, the Phils brought in this year's winner into the booth, and here's what it sounded like.
We're pleased to welcome Lewis Kalb from Medford Lakes, New Jersey. He is our Phillies' fantastic auction winner. He outbid the competition to spend an inning and do some play-by-play in the booth. And Lewis, welcome. Glad to have you here.
Thank you, Scott. It's a thrill to be here. It's a lifelong dream to be in the Phillies broadcast booth, so here we go.
What a voice.
Wait, what?
What a voice.
So this guy, Lewis Kalb, whose qualification, by the way, is just that he won the auction, he legitimately sounds like a sports announcer.
Absolutely.
And then get this, Lewis starts calling the game.
A muggy night here at the bank. Boy, that's for sure. We had some heavy rain. In fact, we got a little bit wet coming in around 5 o'clock. It's taken me about 2 hours to dry out, but fortunately, just in time to step into the booth. Now, Painter delivers, swung on and missed.
And he's funny, too.
Again, what? So, Lewis doesn't just have the voice. He has the cadence. He has the lingo. This guy's the total package. Mm-hmm. And afterward, you know, the internet was lighting up like, who is this guy? It cannot possibly be the first time he has called a baseball game. He sounds flawless. I mean, he sounds flawless, right?
He sounds amazing. What a voice. He has humor. So who is Lewis Kalb?
So I think we have Lewis on the line right now.
Surprise.
Lewis, are you there?
I am here. Great to speak with you.
Hi, Louis.
And it's really his voice. Now it's surreal to hear that voice in a different context. Okay, Louis, we have so many questions, but we don't have a lot of time with you. First of all, we have to know, this is not the first time you've done this, right?
It's the first time I've ever done baseball play-by-play, other than little snippets here or there on a YouTube highlights package for some of the teams locally. But I had done some broadcasting back in the 80s and early 90s. In fact, I used to appear with Howie Rose on his Mets Extra show from Veterans Stadium, just doing pre- and post-game reports. But hadn't done play-by-play, but it was a lifelong dream. And so when that auction chance came up, I said, let's go for it.
And so you shot your shot.
I assumed he had done play-by-play before.
Yeah, I did too. Have you been practicing at home? Like, how did you – I mean, because you were so on point.
Thanks. I've listened to so many broadcasters over the years and been influenced by so many of the greats, including locally Harry Callis and Bill Campbell and Bisom for the Phillies back in the day, and Tom McCarthy and Scott Fransky right now. I practiced certainly in the last couple of months, knowing this was coming, trying to do it off the TV, although that's not quite the same thing as when you're live at the ballpark. Yeah. It's actually much easier there because you can see the flight of the ball. But, yeah, I have, I think like singers in the shower, you might pass me by on the road and see me talking to myself. Well, that's not really what I'm doing. I'm recreating play-by-play.
So did you pursue this ever as a career? Did you aspire to be a play-by-play announcer? Or was this just something it was just sort of a fun fantasy for you?
I did. I wanted to do it really from the age of 9, but you have to be honest with yourself. It's a long shot. There are very few Major League Baseball openings for play-by-play broadcasters. In fact, the Phillies, I think, have had something like 2,500 players in their history that have either played a season or even just a game. But the number of announcers in the last 140 years of Phillies baseball, less than 80. It's a long shot.
And so, Louis, you shot your shot. You bid on this auction. You killed it. Are you hoping they hire you as a fill-in at least?
I think you should be a fill-in.
I would stump for that.
Well, I would certainly listen. Let's put it that way.
If they called, he would listen. That's Louis Kalb from Medford Lakes, New Jersey. And I just have to say, radio play-by-play, because we work in live radio, is like the hardest thing to do this line of work, in this business. The fact that you did that on your first shot is beyond impressive. And thank you for joining us for a bit here on Studio 2, Louis Kalb.
Oh, thank you to you both. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and he made a joke. You know what I mean?
If you listen to the whole thing, he makes several jokes.
I'm like,
his rapport with Larry Anderson, the clerk, was flawless. And there's so much talent out in the world. There is so much talent out in the world.
You might want to give him a shot.
Literary talent included. We're going to talk about books on the other side of this break. Don't go anywhere. Studio Book 2 Book Club is coming up. I'm no Louis Kalb, by the way. And welcome back, everybody, to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Reading rates have been in a slump for a while now. Faced with competition from screens, books are not getting the same amount of love that they used to get.
But research shows that absorbing stories through the written word has benefits that you just cannot get elsewhere. So today, we're going to give books a little love.
Yeah, and joining us in the studio to make the case for reading and give us their top recommendations, we have Dina Halick, Department Head of Philbrick Hall, the Fiction Department of the Central Branch of the Free Library of Philadelphia. Welcome back to the show, Dina.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
Let me also welcome back Jennifer Weiner, New York Times bestselling author and area resident. She's written over 20 books, including Good in Bed, The Griffin Sisters' Greatest Hits, and In Her Shoes. Jen, always nice to see you.
It's great to be here.
Yes. And for you, our listeners at home, on the road, and elsewhere, we would love to hear from you. We want you to share with us your absolute must-read book recommendation for 2026 and stump for your selection. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for those of you watching on Facebook and YouTube, you can put those book selections in the live chat.
Let's get a stumper on the line right now. Let's just start with an audience recommendation.
Let's do it.
The book club is in session. Amy from Lynnwood, New Jersey, has her favorite book of the year. Amy, what do you got for us?
Hi. Well, full disclosure, I am a high school librarian.
Okay.
I would go with the true story of Raj the Gullible and his mother.
Okay.
It was the National Book Award last year. It is quirky, funny, sad, just lovely.
And give me the title one more time. The true story of
Raj, R-A-J, mm-hmm. the Gullible.
Raj the Gullible and his mother.
And his mother.
And that's his fantastic.
Mother. All the emotions felt, according to Amy from Linwood, New Jersey. I
fantastic.
Like that.
Fantastic. All right, so before we get into our panelists' recommendations, we're kind of curious about your guys' reading habits, how you read, mm-hmm. when you read, how often you read.
How many books you got stacked up on the nightstand.
Yeah. So, Jen, let me start with you. Like, do you have a reading routine, or is it kind of as it goes?
I mean, I read all the time, but I would say that the time you can always find me with a book is right before I go to sleep. I read in bed for as long as I can before I fall asleep. I mostly read on my Kindle because on a Kindle, any book can be a large print book.
Mm.
You can just bump up that, right?
And we are right here.
Exactly.
Yes.
So you bump up the brightness. You make the text enormous. Your kids laugh at you, but what can you do?
But you don't need your glasses.
Right?
You go.
It's mm-hmm. perfect. So, you know, but I've noticed it too. Like, I read this. There was a big story in the Atlantic, the end of reading. Yep. And I was like, please don't do this to me. Like, this is my job, you guys. Come on. And the first thing, you know, it talks about sort of the rise of literacy and newspapers and then how newspapers have been decimated. That was my first job. You know, I came here to work at the Philadelphia Inquirer, and I'm just like, you know, like, what dying industry am I going to hop to next? Like, is it going to scrimshaw?
But you know what?
Corsetry.
But
yes.
Jenny, we're going to wake up. We're going to read.
We're gonna fix it in this hour.
I already feel like we're fixing it. Yeah. Dina, your thoughts. How do you read? Or like, what are your reading?
My reading patterns is if there's a free moment, I've got a book, or I sit on the couch to turn on the TV, and I'm like, but there's a book, and then I read a book instead, and then I also listen to books on the way to and from work.
Yes.
So it's like I have an audiobook going, I have a print book going, and if there's something at work that I pull off the shelf, I'm like, nope, reading a book already. So it's like there's always that pile of stuff.
So you have things, a whole to-do list.
I have 2,000 books on my to-read list right now.
Oh my god!
Oh my,
that's insane.
But that would make me feel overwhelmed, though.
Yes.
There's so much to read. Oh my god!
Yes, it does. But I'm taking one for the team here, and I will.
You're doing it
suffer
for us all.
That anxiety of like not being ahead of my reading, so I can read all the books. And recommend all the good ones.
Oh, my God. So, well, we're going to get to those recommendations.
Yeah, we're going to jump and we're going to bring in a caller in just a second. But I want to sort of lay the foundation and get the first round of recommendations going. So if you could each give us one fun, quick and easy read. Maybe this is a beach read, but it should kind of be short so that people can sort of whet their appetites for reading and feel accomplished when they're done.
I love to finish a book.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Dina, you want to start us off with this one?
Sure. And this one's from a few years ago, and it actually started out as a webcomic, which is Check Please by Ngozi Okazu, which is if like the heated rivalry thing got really big this year. This is a figure skater who ends up at college on the men's hockey team. So mm-hmm. and falls in love with the team captain.
So
and it's a graphic
love.
Novel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
adorable.
Yes.
It mean, graphic novel, and sometimes people assume that means YA or mm-mm. that means so, but it's not. Okay?
No, yeah. You can have YA graphic novels. And we have a kids graphic novel section of the kids, teens, adult graphic novel.
Interesting.
And seriously, a book is a book. A graphic novel is the same. It's maybe
no
not the same.
Yeah.
Style of reading. It is reading, it counts. And it's a really easy thing to get into. Like, if you're not big on reading or you just want to get back into it, a graphic novel is fantastic for doing that.
Mm-hmm. And then you feel accomplished when it's all over. So, yeah. Jen, tell us your quick, easy read.
Well, I want to, before that, my older daughter wasn't a reader at first, and mm-hmm. I was beside myself. Mm. I could not believe that a child that didn't love books had come out of my body. And I just did not know what to do. I tried everything. And what finally worked was the graphic novel of A Wrinkle in Time.
Oh.
I gave her that, uh-huh. and she ate it up, and then she moved to the book. So it was a gateway, and it doesn't necessarily have to be. Like, if she'd stayed with graphic novels, and she does, I think, still read a lot of them, but I think a book is a book is a book, and anything, especially with kids, that gets them turning pages is a win.
Yeah.
But my pick, I don't know if this is fun, but I'm gonna stump for Strangers by Belle Burden.
Okay.
Which I'm sure a lot of you have seen that book, heard about mm-hmm. it. It's short, and it's extra short if you skip all the business about the ospreys, which I would recommend you do. She's got this kind of extended metaphor about these birds that I think is
completely
unnecessary. Yeah. This is a woman, a wealthy, privileged, well-connected, you know, Vanderbilt's on one side and Standard Oil on the other. Her husband comes home early in the pandemic. They are quarantining on Martha's Vineyard at their beach home.
This is a real story.
No, this is a true story.
No, yes.
True story. This guy walks in to the marital bedroom and says, I'm done. I'm done. Mm. And I don't want custody of our children. They can see me if they want to, and I'm out of here.
Oh, God.
After like a 20... Mm. Yes, oh, God is right. Mm. After like a 20-year marriage, and this woman had blown her trust funds on family homes that she put in both their names. Ooh. And then he said, I don't want you working. So she stayed home with the kids, and he became a hedge fund manager, made tens of millions of dollars that she did not know about, and went after the houses in the divorce.
Oh my God.
So it's like a financial thriller. It's a horror story. It is a meditation on marriage and love, and can you ever truly know the person who is sleeping next to you in the bed?
I've seen some videos of an interview with her floating around, and I saw it in the bookstore, and I was like, do I read this or not?
Read it.
You're telling me to read it.
Read it.
That's way deeper than mine.
That's good. And it's so good. It's so juicy. You just fly through it.
You fly because you want to know, like, is this guy going to get the houses? Is this woman going to be on the streets of the Upper East Side or Tribeca, actually? But yeah. And the other thing is, a lot of people are talking about this book.
Like, and so you can have conversations
about finances, about prenups, about what women need to know going into marriages to protect themselves.
The good news is she sold a lot of books, so hopefully, you know.
Yeah, she's gonna be all right. She's doing just fine.
She sold a lot of books, y'all.
Sold a lot of books.
I just want to put that out there.
Turned
in the
out
world.
She had some money that she didn't talk about in the book. So the New Yorker did a story about that. So like it's a whole conversation.
Lot of stuff. It's its own universe of stories now.
So let's bring in a couple calls. Kevin from South Jersey's on the line. Kevin, you're on Studio 2. What's your recommendation?
Well, again, enjoying listening to NPR. And WXPN and
thanks, Kevin.
So when my sister asked about a Christmas gift for my kids, she was making the suggestion of getting them some goldfish. I said, fine, but give me a fish tank that has nothing in it, just the fish. So my sister did that. Amory gave them as a Christmas gift, and I asked the kids, what kind of gravel do you want in the fish tank? Whoever reads a book and can tell me about it, you get to pick out what color gravel it is.
Oh, so this was like...
Oh, okay. Got it.
It's like a reading incentive program that you created around the fish tank.
Yeah. For different things, whatever they want in the fish tank, you got to read a book first and tell me about it. And the other one, now they're in their 30s and they're avid readers.
All right.
I love it. Thank you. Thanks, Kevin from South Jersey gave us a positive story.
Yeah, I want to bring in another caller now who I actually think is going to get us nicely into our next category of recommendations. This is Kathy from Ocean City on the line. Hey, Kathy, what are you reading? What are you recommending for us?
Yeah, well, I'm a college graduate from the 70s, Dickinson College, and English major, and I am rereading Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five. I haven't read it since the 70s. And, you know, I forgot what a fabulous writer he is, and it's so relevant for today with his dark humor and social satire, and it's really great, and I think a lot of younger people would really get into it.
Absolutely.
If they haven't gotten into Kurt Vonnegut already, but yeah, it's really interesting.
Great recommendation. Thanks, Kathy. That was our next category, is old classic that deserves a second look. So Slaughterhouse-Five, very much in that theme. Dina, I would love to hear your old classic that deserves a second look.
I have two, if we feel like being depressed or not.
Okay, sure.
So the first one is Sinclair Lewis's It Can't Happen Here, which was written in the 30s, and it's about a fascist dictator who gets elected to government and to president in the United States. But if that is not your thing.
Okay. Let's put that to the side. Dictator. That's interesting.
If you want to read about fascism, that's a great one. If you don't, I am a huge fan of Lucy Maud Montgomery, and everybody knows about Anne of Green Gables. But,
yes.
And I'm going to caveat this that I have not revisited this book yet, so I do not know if it's been visited by the Suck Fairy. Uh-huh. I do not know if it holds up, so I'm really hoping it does. My favorite books of hers were Emily of New Moon. It's a trilogy. Oh. So if you want to go beyond Anne of Green Gables, and that's one where you get all the movies and everything.
Is it still on Prince Edward Island?
It's still on Prince Edward Island.
That's great, because I love
Anne of Green Gables.
So Emily's like, a lot of it's a little darker. Watching. There's a little bit of like, she sees ghosts sometimes, so there's a little bit of paranormal, and she really wants to be a writer. It's only a trilogy, and I loved it so much. Like, I wanted to be Emily.
Was this one of those books that kind of, like, I don't want to say made you a reader, but like was a foundational
it was
for you?
It yeah. was definitely foundational. I think I loved Anne of Green Gables, and then I discovered she wrote more.
Yeah.
And like, then I'm like, oh,
there's more.
There's Anne. Yes. Now there's Emily.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a great trilogy. I hope it's still a great trilogy, but I am planning on revisiting it.
Nice.
And I think that would be a really great one for people to pick up.
I love it.
Jen, what do you think? You got a classic for us?
I'm going to say Fear of Flying by Erica Jong.
I've heard of this one.
Yeah.
Fear of Flying.
Erica Jong's daughter, Molly Jong Fast, wrote a book about, it's called How to Lose Your Mother, which is about growing up the daughter of this sort of feminist icon who, according to Molly, was not such a great mom. And it's really, really interesting to read that book and then go back and read Erica's stories of, you know, sort of getting her perspective. And Fear of Flying is fiction, but it's very closely based on her life and sort of what it was like as a woman in the 70s where your possibilities were not quite as limitless as they are now, and wanting love, wanting intimacy, wanting to be known by your partner, and sort of grappling with the question of, like, can you be a mother too and live a big creative life?
And it's interesting too, right? Because, like you said, the notoriety of her daughter just puts everything that she did in a new light.
Absolutely.
It allows you to revisit, but with some fresh context and eyes.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I think it's really, really interesting to sort of look at, like, how far we've come and then how far we still need to go, because I feel like it's, you know, 50 years later and women are still, like, wrestling with these questions of, like, how do you be a mother and an artist?
Yes.
How do you be a mother and have a creative life?
And the thing I love about reading is it allows you to sort of put yourself in different scenarios and work it all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, because a lot of women have those, I guess they're grappling with that in their own life, and watching someone and reading about someone grapple with it is wonderful. Mm. Let's bring in Kathy from media, who's on the line. Kathy, what are your book recommendations?
Hi, my book recommendations are two. Year of Wonder by Geraldine Brooks. It's a historical fiction about the Black Plague. I found it on my shelf during the lockdown, and that's what got me through. I figured if they could make it through, we could make it through.
Okay.
And then I actually totally disagree with y'all. Books are here to stay.
Yes.
I belong to 5 book clubs, but I realize I'm a bit
Wait. Pause. Kathy, did you just say 5?
5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Okay, continue. Mom, sorry about that.
Well, every time I move into a new space, I join a book club. It's a great way to meet new people and kind of see where heads are at, where you're living.
And you stayed in the old ones, though. Okay.
I did, because some of them have been going on for, well, some of them have been going on for 20 years. I've been in them 10 or 11.
Yeah. Okay.
The other book was one I discovered because I listen to books a lot as well. That counts for reading for me.
Yes.
So I'm listening to one, a different genre, because otherwise you'll get too confused. Like, you can't read 2 Jodi Picouls. You won't know what's going on. You know what I mean? Like, you can't listen and read the same, because you won't know the families. But the other one was just something I discovered because it was available, called Lula Dean's Little Library of Banned Books.
Okay.
By Kirsten Miller.
Yeah.
And it is satirical. It's charming, and you learn a lot as you as you read it. Yeah. It caught me off guard. I've recommended it to at least two of my book clubs, and everybody's loved it. So that's
nice.
Thank you. That's Kathy from Media.
Yeah, Lula great. Dean's Little Library of Banned Books, if you missed the title.
And then Year of Wonder on her first one. Great. I love it. So we want to talk about authors now. And so, you know, Jen, you're an author.
Think so.
Once you get into the double digits in books, you can be an author.
Yeah, totally. Jen, okay.
They can't take it away
they
now.
They cannot. You get, that is a label that sticks with you. So who are you? I mean, I know you're exciting. Mm-hmm. Yes. But who do you see as some of the one of the most exciting authors of right now?
Okay. So Saray Walker, who I believe is back in Philadelphia, wrote a book called Dietland a couple of years ago that was turned into a television show on Hulu, which was very dark and very satirical and sort of this like rallying cry for body positivity. If you guys can remember when that was still a thing.
Yes.
Not anymore. Yeah.
God help us all. Okay. So she's got a new book out now called Furious Violet, which is, I've been recommending it to everybody, and I've been saying it's kind of, it's a thriller, but it's got some meat on its bones. This is about a woman whose mother was this sort of Sylvia Plath-esque poet who has super fans, these groupies who just adore her and are very, very protective of her legacy. These women called the Furies, right? So her daughter is this true crime writer who starts getting notes on her car, like, come home, and I, you know, notes that are suggesting she's somebody's mother, but she's never had a baby.
And who is this author again?
Saray Walker.
Saray.
Yes. Thank you. I'm looking at it right here. The book's Furious Violet. It's out now. People Magazine just recommended it, actually. And it is, I mean, it is dark and it is funny. And it's got so much to say about women and writing and legacies and mothers and daughters and sort of who owns someone's story.
I have just a follow-up question about this. Reading books, literature about writers and the writing process, as someone who is a writer yourself, do you tend to enjoy those types of books more, or do you find it actually sometimes harder for a book to impress you if it's about the interior life of a writer?
That is really interesting, because I feel like I have read more books about writers this summer than I ever. It feels like it's a
You're
thing.
A magnet for those books.
And well,
yes.
Especially with thrillers. Chris Bajalian has a new book out called The Amateur that's about a writer. I just feel like these, I don't know, writers are having a moment, but I like it. I actually, you know, because I think every writer is different. We all work differently. Yeah. We have a different process and we see the world differently, but I enjoy it. And, you know, they always say write what you know. So all of the writers, they're writing what they know.
And so, Dina, your favorite author or the author that you think is exciting right now?
Okay, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, but Vajra Chandrasekara is a Sri Lankan writer, I believe, and I'm a genre reader.
Okay.
And he wrote this book called Rakes Fall, which is, if you ever read This Is How You Lose the Time War, It's How You Win the Time War, oh my goodness, by Max Gladstone and Amal El-Motar, which kind of bounces between time. This one bounces between time, and it kind of takes as its foundational moment all the military uprising and coups and like revolutions in Sri Lanka, and it follows characters throughout time, and almost like timelines coming back and forth. But
I'm reading here, just Googling it, that it's classified as sort of science fiction, which is interesting to me, because it sounds a little bit like you're also describing historical fiction as well.
It is. It's taking this historical moment in time and kind of branching out from it. And the language is amazing. I listened to this book. And I have to say, if you ask me what this book's about, I cannot answer, because I was just listening to it and letting it wash over me.
Oh, wow.
And it was just, I got sucked into it and I got sucked into these people's lives. And at the end, I'm like, I think I've been wrung out.
Yeah.
And this is amazing. But for me, the whole book was like a vibe.
And what is it about this author, just the fact that
the language that he uses,
he
just immerses you in this world, not just this one world, but all these multiple
worlds.
It takes you everywhere. And I think one of the great things about reading now, especially that we're seeing now, is that there's so many voices that we don't get in traditional North American English literature. We're seeing a lot of stuff in translation. We're seeing a lot of authors from other countries getting to write books. And it's amazing.
I love it.
Well, we have more recommendations from our panelists and our listeners coming. Don't go anywhere. Studio 2 Book Club is in session. You're listening to WHYY. And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We're talking about the benefits of reading and getting book recommendations from a pair of great guests.
They are Jennifer Weiner, New York Times bestselling author and area resident. And we also have Dina Halick, the department head of Philbrick Hall, the fiction department of the Central Branch of the Free Library of Philadelphia.
Yeah, and as always, friends, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Share with us your absolute must-read book recommendation for 2026. 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. And for our Facebook and YouTubers, you can put your comments in the chat. John, from Haddonfield, New Jersey, recommends No Dogs in Philly by Andy Futuro. It's a cyberpunk dystopia set in Philadelphia.
All right,
go figure. Yeah. Let's bring in a caller. We have, let me see, Alexandria from Landenburg, Pennsylvania on the line. Alexandria, you're on Studio 2. What's your recommendation?
Hi there. Thank you all for a great program. And full disclosure, I'm a nurse practitioner. I actually recently prescribed books for one of my older patients.
I love it.
Yes. So my recommendation is Devil is Fine by John Vercher.
Okay.
And I believe local Philly connection there. Beautiful voice, beautiful writer. And there are some racial undercurrents. And I don't want to be a plot spoiler, but there is a enslaved graveyard that's discovered, and just the narrative and the beauty of the book makes it a must read.
Nice.
Thank you, Alexandra.
I'll read this description. Still reeling from a sudden tragedy, our biracial narrator receives a letter from an attorney. He has just inherited a plot of land from his estranged white grandfather. So that's the setup, according to Macmillan Publishers.
Wow. And so we're going to jump back into our recommendations, but we want to go quick because we want to get to as much as possible. So we want to jump to quickly, a genre that might surprise you, and then we want to talk nonfiction because, you know, that's what I read. So we'll start with you, Dina, on this one. What is a genre that might surprise you?
I just got into horror. And I am, like, I always
thought...
You're
going to have to convince me on
that. I know. Because I always thought horror was like slasher flicks. And I'm like, I can't. It'll give me nightmares.
So define it for us then.
I actually, for me, I got into it through dark fantasy, which is like, it's like...
Very alluring.
Yeah, I know. So, it's like basically fantasy, but worse things happen.
Okay.
Right.
So horror.
But you know what they have now? Cozy horror.
Yes.
Oh.
Cozy horror. I read a book called Direct Descendant by Tanya Huff, which is like a really cozy small town romance. But there's also Eldritch terrors living in the lake.
Mm.
And the whole town is like part of this hereditary
cabal.
So as a
non-horror person, you have found ways to enjoy the genre. That's nice.
I have.
I like that. Okay, Jen.
I'm going to go with MM romance.
For what is MM?
For male-male.
Oh, man-man romance. Okay.
Yeah, so you gotta learn the lingo. So it's like M/M is two guys. M/F/M is two guys and a woman.
This is all
is
under
two
the umbrella.
So
of
tell me what drew you into this genre?
Curiosity.
Okay. Is it heated rivalry?
No. I mean, although I recommended one of the heated rivalry books before it was a thing, and I just wear that like a badge of honor that I had discovered these books like before the rest of the world. But if you want, so this author I'm recommending is KJ Charles.
She's amazing,
isn't she?
Yeah.
Great,
I love her.
And anything she writes is fantastic. But I'm especially a fan of the Sins of the City books, they're penny dreadfuls mixed with mystery, mixed with erotica. This woman, she writes sex scenes that are like
Mind blowing.
The best things that they're so well written, and they're so, I mean, which, you know, it's not just, you know, part B into slot C or whatever.
It's good writing.
And
I love it.
The history and the atmosphere and the details and the characters. She wrote a book called Think of England that is like one of my all-time favorites. And
KJ Charles.
And I want to jam in on nonfiction because I am a nonfiction reader, and so I would love to get
so it's nonfiction that won't put you to sleep. That's what we call it. Go ahead, Dita, you're raising your hand.
So
you're wide awake. I can see it.
Please.
I love popular science.
Yes.
Okay. And so I discovered Sam Keen, and he has a book called Dinner with King Tut, How Rogue Archaeologists Are Recreating the Sights, Sounds, Smells, and Tastes of Lost Civilizations. So it's not just digging up cities. It's like digging up a city, figuring out how they made bread, and then making the bread that they made. Or figuring out how to do the throwing thing in South America. He's amazing.
So bizarre. I love this.
He, like anything he writes, he wrote one called The Violinist's Thumb. He wrote one called The Disappearing Spoon, which was like the history of the discovery of every element on the periodic table.
Yeah.
Anything he writes is just, you're laughing throughout the whole thing, and you're learning so much stuff.
I love it. Okay.
Jen.
Lou Chakowsky's memoir, Don't Buy What I'm Selling. Okay. This is Gen X, pop culture, plus size woman, working at MTV, sort of in the height of heroin chic, right? Where
everybody is super small. Yeah.
And she's trying to figure out how to love herself or even just tolerate herself while her day job is pumping out these messages that are telling her she should hate herself and want to change everything about herself. So if you are, you know, sort of an 80s baby, if you remember when MTV played music videos and was like the must watch, like, you know, when Michael Jackson had a new video, you had to be home to watch it. Like,
it was
the minute
appointment
that it dropped,
TV. Yeah.
Appointment TV. So it's pop culture, it's body stuff, it's how advertising works, and, you know, the idea that, like, it's this giant vacuum to sort of suck your money away by making you hate yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, and my goodness.
Don't
Buy What I'm Selling by Lou Chakowsky.
I love it.
Can we bring in another caller?
Yeah, let's bring in a caller.
Kathleen from Chestnut Hill, who has been on the line for a bit. I'm curious for your thoughts. I think you've got a little story about getting folks into reading. Would love to hear it on Studio 2.
Oh, well, thank you. Really enjoying the show. Yes, we lived in Old City when my very old children now were born. And, of course, you should always read to your babies even. But we got on a regular visit to the Logan Library when they were very young. And it was always so exciting walking down that stairwell and into the corridor where there were framed library posters of all the different years. So they would always choose their year and find it, and they thought that was so exciting. Go in, read in the library, get new books, return their old ones. So it was very exciting for them. And I think it engendered a real spirit of loving books, loving the library to such an extent that my daughter is now a branch librarian with the Free Philadelphia Library.
Oh, Dina is
who
like,
is it?
Dina's
Dina's like, oh, do I know them?
She's in Chestnut Hill, Prather Egan.
Oh, I know Prather.
like a family reunion here on Studio 2.
Yeah,
thank you, Kathleen.
She's a children's librarian, but she, you know, is a branch librarian now, and she just loves it and loves the library system.
Thank you.
A wonderful job. Yeah.
Thank you.
And Jennifer, your books every one of your books should be a movie.
Oh, thank you for saying that.
Kathleen,
that's very nice.
Is making everybody smile
that's
today.
What a
nice.
Lovely phone call. Can we get in one more phone call here? Let's bring in Julie from Haddonfield, who I think has a recommendation for us. Julie, you're on Studio 2. What are you recommending?
My recommendation is The Loneliness of Sonia and Sonny. I loved the book. I wasn't sure I would, but it's about two people who were from India who came to the U.S. to do better in the world, and their parents thought they were, but things were not going as smoothly as they thought they would. And they eventually meet. And in a way, it's foretold that they would, but in another way, it was not. And I just thought the title was wonderful, and the two characters, as well as all the other characters, were really good. And I just want to add one thing. When my youngest child was in fourth grade, he was really not reading very well, and I was talking with another mother whose son was reading all the time, and we suggested that we start a book club. And so it was five kids, boys and girls, and their mothers. We would meet once a month for 45 minutes. There would be snacks at the end. We picked a variety of books. It was the children who took turns picking a book, usually talking with their mom beforehand. And it was great. Those kids are they're now in their 30s. The kids are still connected to each other. And my son reads a lot now. And these five kids talk about what they're reading now as adults. So I just wanted to share that. Oh, and I wrote an article about it, and the Philadelphia Inquirer published it.
Thank you. That's Julie from Haddonfield. Fantastic. What a wonderful story.
Could we squeeze in real quick epic audiobook recommendations? Mm-hmm. Real quick, we're going to have to get through these fast. But Dina, can you start us off with an audiobook you just truly loved?
Okay. I loved Ancillary Justice by Anne Leckie. Back to science fiction. And I love the book, but the narrator is Adjoa Ando, and I have never had a crush on a person's voice before.
Ooh, let's
in my
hear
entire
this.
Life.
We have a clip.
Let's play this.
This was the icy back end of a cold and isolated planet, as far from Ratcha'i ideas of civilization as it was possible to be.
Civilization.
I was only here on this planet, in this town, because I had urgent business of my own.
What do you love about that
Bodies
voice?
Bodies in the street were none of my concerns.
None of my concerns.
It's just this like richness, and she has a way. There's a difference between acting and narrating.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, so true.
And her narration, she can do something with an intonation that I get chills. Yeah. She also played Lady Danbury on Bridgerton.
This is how you know when you hear a voice like that, this is a profession that needs to continue. Because not everybody can read on that level.
No.
All right, Jen, what is your pick?
I tried to narrate one of my books. I've done it once, and I will never do it again because I can hear my characters in my head, and they all sound different, but like out of my mouth,
they all sound the same. Yeah.
It's just not a talent I have, and I so admire people who can do it. All right, so my audio recommendation is Dungeon Crawler Carl. These books are
Dungeon Crawler
Carl. They own the New York Times bestseller list right now. It's sort of it's dystopian. It's the end of the world, and this guy named Carl and his girlfriend's cat Princess Donut are overcoming a series of challenges as they move through different levels of this.
And we have a clip, so let us play it.
It was below freezing. I was outside, and I was wearing boxers, a leather jacket, and a pair of pink Crocs sandals that barely fit me.
Ooh, I
was also holding a crying, scratching, squirming, and spitting cat named Princess Donut, the Queen Anne Chunk.
Is that Porter?
I'm not even sure who the narrator is.
The voice does feel familiar somehow.
If it's Porter, it's the same guy who did Project Hail Mary.
My husband listens to a lot of audiobooks, and he loves narrators that sound like that.
Right.
I will say that. He loves narrators.
I think what's wonderful about those books is like they were self-published, and then like the audio became a huge hit, and now everybody's like buying the actual books. But it's men. Okay?
Yeah.
Men are not big consumers of fiction normally. And they're loving this stuff. So
I'm telling
that's
you,
great.
I'm gonna have to ask because it sounds like something that I've heard my husband.
Apparently, Jeff Hayes is apparently the narrator. So we're gonna shout out Jeff Hayes for being the narrator.
Yeah.
So I think we're wrapping it up here. Do we have time to give our quick recommendations?
Go ahead.
This is a public affairs show in Philadelphia, and I think if you wanted just a book that gives you a nice literary but nonfiction overview of Philadelphia, I always recommend A Prayer for the City by Buzz Bissinger, which is sort of about Ed Rendell, but you can kind of skip those parts now and just focus on the history part. It still holds up.
Yeah, and the book that I'm reading right now, because I'm a huge Beyonce fan, is Matriarch by Tina Knowles, aka Beyonce's mom. It's about how she grew up and how like she helped create Beyonce. There you go.
Well, we have to end the conversation here, but I could listen to, speaking of listening to great voices, I could listen to you guys talk
you
about
guys
just
are
about
great.
Anything.
You guys are great.
Let me think.
You ladies are great.
Jen yeah. Weiner, New York Times bestselling novelist and area resident. By the way, what's the latest, Jen, for you?
The Griffin Sisters Greatest Hits.
Griffin Sisters Greatest Hits.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And Adina Halick, department head of Philbrick Hall, the fiction department of the Central Branch of the Free Library of Philadelphia. Thank you so much for what you do, and thank you for being here, Adina.
Thank you so much.
And by the way, I got a shout out Lisa from Berks County. Her book recommendations, The Murder Club by Richard Osman and Theo of Golden by Alan Levi. I think one of our callers also recommended Theo.
All right, so let's get to our Studio 2 DJ of the day song selection. Al, hit it.
I am giving you
That is Every Day I Write the Book by Elvis Costello and the Attractions from the 1983 record Punch the Clock.
Flawless recommendation. Mm-hmm. Great DJing. Thank you to Chris H. from Bethlehem and Lauren H. from Westchester, no relation between the two, for choosing that song and being our co-DJs of the day.
I love it. And I got to say thank you to our producers, Debbie Builder, Hazel Mae Bryan, and Ben Abrams. Al Banks and Mike Schiffler engineered today's show. Our executive producer and DJ is Kevin McCrory. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We will talk to you next week.